Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated.
Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart, and you just heard from Amy Bell, and sitting beside her on the other side of the board is Ebony Johnson, one of our most recent certified engineers and certified programmers at KKFI. And to my left are Janet Brown-Moss Awaken, founder of Bridgeworks, and beside her is Betty Tate Beaver, who is the executive director of the National Association of Multicultural Education, and the acronym is NAME, N-A-M-E. And when we come back from our news spots, we will talk to them, or they will talk to us, about who will end racism, when and how can white women participate meaningfully in changing racism in our country. Does that kind of sum it up, sort of?
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay. Right now, we're going to hear women's news.
Well, first, I would like to remind our listeners that we are passing the hat today. We just need a little contribution from you, whatever you have to spare. And I'm going to give you that number right now. The phone number is 888-931-0901. We're going to go ahead and continue to give you a great show to listen to today, but periodically remind you, please send in your donation. It's how we keep on the air here at KKFI, and it's how community radio works.
And give that number another time.
It is 888-931-0901.
The most important call you will make today. Let me go on record as saying that.
All right. In the news today, self-described neo-masculinist Roosh V was forced to cancel a series of pro-rape culture meetups after widespread outrage against the group, led by women's rights activists, Anonymous, and a women's boxing club in Toronto. Roosh V claimed that he could, quote, no longer guarantee the safety or privacy of the men who want to attend. The Center for Disease Control is facing backlash surrounding their new guidelines for pregnant women. The guidelines appear to warn women who are not pregnant not to drink alcohol because they might become pregnant. The CDC warned that, quote, more than 3 million U.S. women are at risk of exposing their developing baby to alcohol because they are drinking, having sex, and not using birth control to prevent pregnancy. In an article for Mashable, Rebecca Ruiz stated, quote, its underlying message was unmistakable. Women should consider themselves first a vessel for human life and make decisions about their health and behavior based on that possibility. Nobel Peace Prize winner and education activist Malala Yousafzai is leading a campaign to provide learning opportunities to Syrian refugees, stating, quote, someday the Syrian civil war will end, but how will Syrians rebuild their country when a whole generation has lost years of education? And Women's E-News reports that British Prime Minister David Cameron is facing backlash after singling out Muslim women earlier this month for needing special help in English literacy, for being, quote, traditionally submissive, and for being more likely to be targeted by extremist groups. On January 18th, Cameron said British Muslim women who did not learn English were at risk of deportation. Cameron argued that insufficient English skills left people susceptible to ISIS's message. However, other British political leaders were quick to criticize him. Tim Farron, the Liberal Democrat leader, said that singling out Muslim women only serves to isolate those Cameron says he wants to help. Cameron's announcement took place on the same day that Parliament debated a petition calling for a UK ban on US Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, who is notoriously arguing for a U.S. travel ban on all Muslims on the basis of hate speech.
And now we're going to hear from Ebony. I think she's got a spot about a woman that needs to be noted.
Yes, I do. And just in honor of Black History Month, we are referencing and highlighting Dr. Jemison's remarkable life. In addition to being a doctor, an engineer, academic, and entrepreneur, she includes 6 years with NASA as an astronaut, during which she became the first woman of color in the world to go into space. Jemison resigned from NASA in 1993 and founded the Jemison Group Incorporated, a technology and consulting firm to consider social-cultural impacts when designing technologies. As an environmental studies professor at Dartmouth College from 1995 through 2001, she taught courses on sustainable development and technology design. Prior to joining NASA in 1987, she served as the Area Peace Corps medical officer for Sierra Leone and Liberia in West Africa and a general practitioner in Los Angeles. As an astronaut, Jemison had assignments as a liaison between the astronaut corps and launch operations at Kennedy Space Center. She served on the Human Research Protocol Board, tested the software that operates the shuttle, and flew aboard the Space Shuttle Endeavour Space Lab Japan mission, the first joint mission with the Japanese Space Agency. In addition, as a strong, committed voice for science literacy, in 1994, Jemison founded the International Science Camp, The Earth We Share, for students 12 to 16 years old, a program of the nonprofit Dorothy Jemison Foundation for Excellence. The foundation held Celebrating Women of Color in Flight to highlight that women are vitally involved in aviation and aerospace across the world in all capacities, from astronauts to electricians to storytellers. Jemison is Bayer Corporation's National Science Literacy Advocate. In her book, Find Where the Wind Goes, Jemison writes for teenagers about growing up on the south side of Chicago, cultivating her aspiration to be a scientist and professional dancer, her experiences as a medical student in Africa, and her history-making journey into space. Dr. Jemison is a member of the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, an inductee of National Women's Hall of Fame and the National Medical Association Hall of Fame, and winner of the Kilby Science Award. Jemison was an A.D. White Professor at Large at Cornell University and is a board member of Kimberly-Clark, Scholastic, and Volsper. Jemison is chair of the Texas State Product Development and Small Business Incubator Board, chair of the Greater Houston Partnership Disaster Planning and Recovery Task Force, and member of Morehouse College Board of Trustees. Dr. Jemison graduated with a B.S. in Chemical Engineering and completed the requirements for an A.B. in African and Afro-American Studies from Stanford University and earned her M.D. from Cornell University Medical College. Jemison hosted the television series World of Wonder and has appeared in documentaries on spaceflight as well as her African-American roots. In 1993, Jemison was chosen one of People magazine's, quote, world's 50 most beautiful people, end quote. A Star Trek fan in her youth, Jemison appeared in an episode, the series' popular sequel, Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So what have you all done this week?
Yeah, it sounds like she's been pretty busy. And, you know, just an example of women who are out there doing things and making a difference in the world that we little hear about. And she happens to be a Black woman besides. Mm-hmm. How amazing. Because, you know, history is largely written by white men. And usually it's about white men.
I think the more amazing thing is, they should have posters of her, like, for children to put up in their room, and we don't see that. Like, how can a person be that amazing and not
be more prevalent?
A household name.
Oh, yeah. Right, right. Well, just a reminder, that telephone number to call is 888-931-0901.
We do have some people to thank, I believe, Sharon.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have... Well, we have Ebony Johnson to thank. And while we're thanking Ebony Johnson, let's thank Amy and Sharon.
Yes.
That would be the three of us. We all believe in this show, and we contribute to it also. And then another person is Lisa Osborne from Olathe, Kansas, and Carol Suma from Parkville, Missouri.
Yeah, we've been thank you all for your donations. We still need to keep them coming today. We do have some gifts. The $75 contribution gets you a collaboration CD. That's the special new CD that KKFI has produced to have a local artist doing a special project to raise money for KKFI. $90, of course, gets you that wonderful collectible KKFI T-shirt that we all just have to have. Every season we have to get our new T-shirt. $150 will get you a guest DJ spot, which is a whole lot of fun. And $200 or more will get you a T-shirt and a guest DJ, or a pair of tickets and a guest DJ. Oh, that is, we only have a few of those tickets left, though. There is a Folk Alliance, Kansas City Folk Fest tickets, and you get a pair of those for at the $90 level if you choose instead of the T-shirt. But those tickets are actually running kind of low. So if you are a Kansas City Folk Fest person, then get both of your things at once and help contribute to community radio and snag one of those few remaining pairs of tickets that we have there. So that phone number is 888-931-0901. And Sharon was about ready to say why she loves community radio so much.
Well, I love community radio because I've been involved down here for 20 years. And I love especially the public affairs programming because I hear things that I don't get to hear on any other radio station in town or when I turn on the TV. There are not the controversial discussions and issues discussed that we hear on the KKFI airwaves. We have Democracy Now! From 8 to 9 every weekday morning with Amy Goodman, an internationally known figure who's been, I think she's been on the airwaves, well, almost since probably the inception of 1988 in Kansas City. And she writes lots of books, and I hear tell she might be coming to Kansas City on a book tour maybe sometime this spring. And then we have Monday Morning's Jaws of Justice, a fairly new program that's excellent, produced locally. And, Tuesdays, we have Eco Radio. I don't have a schedule in front of me. Heartland Labor Forum, Tell Somebody on Thursday mornings. Wednesday morning, we have some syndicated shows. And we just have lots of great programming down here in the public affairs arena. And then there's music. People in Kansas City seem to like blues and jazz, and we offer plenty of that to the Kansas City listener and people in the 75-mile radius surrounding Kansas City.
And that number, one more time, is 888-931-0901. Whatever you can contribute, we are happy to have it. And this is really just think of it as passing the hat.
And if you listen, especially if you men out there, we know you're out there because you call us all the time. We need you to call in with a contribution to every woman, because when we open our phone lines, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a man that calls in. So during pledge drive, it behooves you men out there to call in and make a pledge to every woman, because we know you support us and love us. So put your money where your mouth is and make a phone call right now. That's 888-931-0901. And even if you hate us, call us, because we'll take your money.
Right.
And we'll even take comments from you. You can even call us and tell us how much you hate us. But call. The important thing is that you call 888-931-0901. And now I'm going to reintroduce Janet Brown Moss Awaken and Betty Tate Beaver, who is, I won't try to remember name, is the National Association of Multicultural Education. Going to dialogue each other with us interjecting at appropriate times, we hope, about how we can end racism. I want to make one quick comment. When President Obama was elected, a black woman in Kansas City said to me, "Racism is over." Okay.
Okay.
Go yeah. with that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, what do you have to say about that, Betty?
I wish she had been accurate. I wish that had been a true statement. But
well, I want to identify myself first as my ethnicity, since this is radio. I am this is Janet, and I'm a white woman, so I speak from that place of being today in regards to talking about how women, especially what white women can do to eliminate racism or decrease it at least.
And I'm Betty Tate Beaver. I find myself, as I said to you earlier, Janet, identifying myself often, whether it's radio or in person. I am African American and Native American. And that Janet and I do similar work in our work to better unify the people in this country.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really been interested in this topic a lot because I've been, as Betty mentioned, both of us do this work. I've been working in this field of race relations and difference, whatever it is, whether it's religion or whatever, since my youngest son was born. He's going to be 33. Wow. Okay. So anyway, I have noticed that there are many ways that white people can make inroads or help make inroads for people who are less, who do not have as much privilege in our country. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that with someone of a different ethnicity to see whether we can come to agreement or some either further expand our thinking about that.
Well, I want to. You said that you'd been doing this work for 33 years. Mm-hmm. I learned a couple of years ago that this is truly something. This is a legacy in my family. My great grandfather did social justice and race relations wow. work in the South at the turn of the last century. They have an exhibit about him in a museum in Charlotte, and just last year dedicated a statue in his honor. The first statue dedicated to a local North Carolina person in Charlotte, African American, I should say, in Charlotte last year.
Wow.
So that's five generations
nice.
In my family of having done race relations work. And doggone it, I wish we could be put out of business.
Right,
I think
we exactly. had
to say problem solved and
exactly.
let's go home.
Right, because it gets really stressful sometimes for me, even as a white woman, and I'm sure it gets very stressful. I mean, I know it gets much more stressful for people of color working in this field because you just can't go home from it.
No.
You know. So I'm really urging white people to look at this issue. How is it we seem to have the key? And Betty, you showed me a quote.
Oh, yeah. It's here a quote, from, it's a quote I love from Stokely Carmichael.
I really agree with it.
Being raised in Berkeley, so California, in the 60s and 70s, Stokely Carmichael was an activist in the civil rights movement that was considered quite an icon in my early life in this work. And so what Stokely Carmichael said about white allies, I find fantastic. He said, white people must start building those anti-racist institutions inside the white community. And that's the real question, I think, facing the white activists. The question is, can they, in fact, begin to move into and tear down the institutions which have put us all in a trick bag that we've been in for the last 100 years?
Well, yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's so interesting because there is an African-American man who is I can't call him a friend. He's an acquaintance. He's quite elderly now. He's been working in this field for many, many years. He's probably 80s, 90s. And he said to me one day after a workshop that I was doing with white people and people of color, he said, you know, Janet, here's, you put all this information in front of white people and they say how unfair it is. Things, regulations are government made, like for where they could live and use their veterans benefits after the war. Black people could have veterans benefits with housing, but they couldn't live in the suburbs. Right. They couldn't use them for that. So he said, you can tell white people this all you want, but I don't believe that they're going to want to give up the power to do it. And so what I still keep hoping is there might be some people, maybe they're younger white people, I don't know, who will feel, who will decide that they're going to make a difference. And there's so many differences to be made. I was thinking of some examples that I've actually experienced or my friends or people in the workshops have told me about. And I was thinking about this woman who I work with sometimes, and she was driving. She's an African-American minister. She was driving to a church convention, and in the car were two white women who were also ministers. And she said that the police pulled her over. And they asked, I mean, she didn't know what this was about. It was a tail light or, you know, some very small thing. And they said, they looked at the car, they looked at the white women, and they said, are you okay? This has only been a few years ago. Now, this is an amazing opportunity for the white women to say something. And I'm going, but she's, as I heard the story, I don't think they said anything. Well, this is a perfect example where a white person
right.
can take the lead here. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I'd like to interject something. I just came to my mind. At our last Homeowners Association board meeting, of which I am the new president, I said our declaration states that it was written in 1955 that no Jewish people or black people could live in our neighborhood. And I said, we need to change that. And the board argued with me. They said, no, that's a historic document. What would you two say to that? Do we need to change that, or is that a historic document and it needs to be let lay?
It is a historic document that needs to be changed.
Exactly.
Thank you.
But Janet, to the comment that you made, there's a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. where he says, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Right.
And the comment that you just made, you know, if you, even if beyond just the color that's on either one of our skins, that's a common human understanding. You know what? Anyone has been in that situation where you may have wished that you would have stood up for mm-hmm. somebody else, mm-hmm. or you wish that somebody else mm-hmm. would have stood up for you,
mm-hmm.
just because you have the sense as a human being, this just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel right for someone else to tell me where I can live and then systematically co-create conditions that put me in oppressive positions.
Terrible.
You wouldn't want that done to you or your children. And so if we can connect maybe more in a bit of a heart-to-heart space and say, you know, there's something more than the small differences that we have, those themselves are to be celebrated, but that we share a common humanity. We all mm-hmm. deal with all of these feelings mm-hmm. and connect from, you know, from that mm-hmm. equal space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to comment that I completely agree with all of this, but in the situation of getting pulled over for something ridiculous, and I've been in that situation where I was a passenger in the car and it seemed like a kind of racist stop. And I was just like, what do you think? You can't do this. What do you think? You know? And the driver of the car was like, would you just shut up? I mean, there was kind of this idea that speaking up in that moment was actually just going to make it worse for the person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the really challenging things mm-hmm. in that situation to me is mm-hmm. like, I don't want to be the friend that's silent. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Right. But that is part of the talk we have mm-hmm. with our children. People always say that they have this talk with their African American sons. Well, I have four daughters, mm-hmm. and they were raised in I raised my kids in a suburb of Seattle. It was a predominantly white community. And I had to have, my ex and I had to have that talk with our kids about you're not going to win at the curb. So just get away from the curb safely. In other words, if you're stopped by the police, if there's a question, if there's a challenge, this is not the time to have that argument.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I think that has to be gauged each situation, right. And I have to pick the fires I'm going to fight and where I'm going to fight them. I guess what I'm saying is I don't know if those women ever did anything about it. There right. could have been something I would have done later.
Oh, I think there's definitely follow-up to that right. after the fact.
Now, here's a really good example. I had a coworker once who was African-American, and there was some things going on with him that the boss, my boss, was trying to get him to, he had been wronged, and she didn't want it brought out. And she was a white woman, and I was really upset about it. So I went to him, and I said, you know, I'm willing to lose my job over this. I'd like to say something about it and do something about this that I could. And he convinced me not to. And I obeyed him. I mean, I did what he wanted because he felt there was too much trade-off that he would have to make in his livelihood if that would have come out. And so I didn't do it. And so, because I think I need to let the person take the lead in that regard, unless, of course, they're being beaten up or something.
We have to walk in solidarity with one another.
Right.
And I know even with my organization, we have an international conference every year. And this is, we just had our 25th anniversary last year and had our convention in New Orleans where we were founded. And one of the discussions I have with our political action committee every year is they want to go in and do something, support whatever community that we're going to have our convention in. This year it'll be in Cleveland. And they want to bring that activist spirit. And I have this conversation with them every year. You have to go into the community and ask them, how can we walk in solidarity with you? Mm-hmm. Not, we're going to come in and save the day. That's not what anyone is looking for. Mm-hmm. But we have to walk in solidarity, heart to heart, as you said, Ebony. We have to. That going in to any situation and not asking the people who have been offended, mm-hmm. what can I do to walk
exactly.
with you?
Right.
That is so important. But Janet is an example of when you, I know you have been a great ally for me. My partner, Louis Duguid, who is a columnist at the Kansas City Star, has been facilitating right. Diversity talks for many years. Mm-hmm. And I've been joining in that conversation for about the last 5 years or so. And just recently, we had a rather heated discussion, and I enjoy these talks because they really are people with very different perspectives and very different backgrounds who come together in an attempt
right.
to find some common ground and to understand and respect one another. Well, we were talking about things at MU that had happened just a short time before this particular meeting. And this one gentleman just...
And he was a white man.
White man. Right. And in previous meetings, he always seemed very open to wanting to understand a different perspective, the perspective of people of color. And he just didn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. And he, no matter what facts, he just didn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. And finally, I realized I needed to be quiet and let Janet explain it to him. He was much more receptive to hearing it from her perspective. And I think that's the value of allies.
Right, yeah.
You can have a conversation with your people. And part of it, you know, I've been doing, even before joining NAME, I've been doing this kind of work literally since I was a kid. My first protest in Berkeley, I was in fourth grade. One of the things that I've learned in that time is that we can talk to one another in a way we may not be able to talk with other people. If I understand your perspective, I may be able to communicate it better with someone who I see as being like me, mm-hmm. better mm-hmm. than you might, and the reverse is true.
You know, since I started doing some work on white privilege, Peggy McIntosh, is
yes.
that her name?
Yes.
Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. She was actually doing research on women's issues and ran across all this stuff about people of color and how the white privilege. And so now I think I've lost my train of thought about
Peggy
the white privilege.
Peggy said it when it dawned on her while she was doing that research, it woke her up in the middle of the night, literally, because it all came together.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what I was going to say. Let me catch this here. So that white women are in a particularly pivotal place sometimes, especially if they're wives of powerful white men. They can create some inroads. They can create some conversation because they look more like the white man than a black man or a black woman. And so a white man might be more willing to open one ear, anyway, toward me than a woman of color. So.
Well, and one of the reasons why we've been... We always try to focus a little bit on what we can do. They call it intersectional feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's so important about intersectional feminism is that, you know, a lot of the things that cause racism are a fear of losing power or some of these things, that affects women too. And we do need to come together. And when you, as a white woman, are speaking up for your friends who are people of color, you are speaking up for yourself, too. I mean, it's not so separate. We are absolutely on the same side. And I like that we're having these conversations to maybe help people learn how to do it a little bit better.
Well, you know, let me say something here. This is really pivotal, right, what you brought up, because... As a white woman, if I'm working in a large organization or a corporation, if I'm noticing that my department or somewhere, you know, that people of color are being treated in a different manner, given opportunities, it's my responsibility to go, I see it anyway, to go to meetings about staff meetings or whatever and bring up the issue that, you know, this is hurting all of us. Mm-hmm. We are, it's not that we're trying to pull these people up to elevate them like we are. It's that we are missing out on some wonderful ideas at the table if they aren't there, if difference isn't there at the table.
Yeah, and perspectives. And, I mean, especially in business, if you only hear the voice of one type of person, you're only making a product for one type of person, and you're missing a whole lot of sales. I mean, it is actually an economic benefit.
It is an economic benefit. It's an what I think is hard for people to understand is racism is not just about angry outbursts or using inappropriate language to mm-hmm. call to label another
right.
group. It is. In this country, and I dare say universally, systemic. Mm-hmm. It has been ingrained in this country since its beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's institutionalized, and we have to work to undo that. And to do that work, we have to work together. And it's not about white allies feeling guilty.
No, it's not about
it's understanding that you're taught this from the time you're a small child. Mm-hmm.
And with that thought, we are going to take a break, a quick break. But please remember, everyone, to support conversations like this that actually help us have better understanding. We are doing our pledge drive, and you can still call in 888-931-0901, 888-931-0901. And pledge any amount of money that you can to keep supporting conversations like this that need to be had in our community.
And if you need to, pick up a pencil right now. We're going to take a quick break, and we will give you that number again when it's done. So we'll give you some time to write this number down.
City in Motion Dance Theater, presenting the 13th annual A Modern Night at the Folly on February 6th. Featuring new works by 10 choreographers, every year dancers and dance lovers anticipate this choreographer's showcase because it brings our entire dance community together. That's A Modern Night at the Folly, February 6th at 8 p.m. in the historic Folly Theater, 300 West 12th Street. More information and advance tickets are available at follytheater.com.
And we're back with our conversation today on how we might work together to end racism as white women and black women. And we have Janet Brown-Moss Awaken and Betty Tate Beaver, and both of them are illustrious advocates, activists in the Kansas City area with resumes too long to read on the air. But you can tell by listening to them that they know what they're talking about, and they've been there and they've been doing the work. And speaking of the work, as hosts on KKFI, it is our job to ask you a few times a year to call in and donate money, pledge your support to KKFI to keep the programming that you are listening to, that you enjoy, on the air. And there is so much diverse programming. Speaking of diversity, KKFI is what diversity is about. And you can find anything that you want. It just might be at a time different from right now. Maybe you don't like women's programming, but call us anyway.
Oh, if you love to hate us, we'd love to have your money, too.
888-931-0901. And, you know, I said it a few minutes ago. You men out there, you know who you are. You listen to us. You call us. Now it's your turn to call in and make a pledge. Show us that you really do want to see women equal to men.
Our guests are pulling out their wallets right now.
Yes.
And this is the way it works here. We are an actual community organization. The guests that we bring in are members of the community. They are people that you would be able to meet yourself in a meeting, at a church, at a protest rally, at a coffee shop. I mean, they're all over the place. They are actually the people in their community. They're probably the people that you've honked at on the plaza from time to time. Maybe angrily honked at. We don't know.
They probably have interesting bumper stickers on their cars. And
you've
today
probably
they're
going to
get a KKFI bumper sticker in case they don't already have one. You can have a KKFI bumper sticker, too, if you call in with your pledge.
And it's 888-931-0901. The other thing that's really unique about this is that we don't serve any interests but the community. Mm-hmm. We do not have corporate, big commercial
sponsors.
Sponsors, yeah. Or we don't have government funding.
We don't sell
funding.
Product.
We don't have government funding. We don't have corporate funding. We're not subject to lobbyists. We are not subject to regulations that are, well, about what we say. We're subjected to the FCC. They
mind us pretty closely, but otherwise,
unless we're trying to say bad words, they don't care what we say. That's a good thing.
But within certain restrictions, mm-hmm. But yes, we do have to mind some rules, but largely we get to bring you really outrageous sometimes opinions that you're not going to hear anyplace else in Kansas City or Topeka or Lawrence or Maryville or however far this radio signal reaches.
And because it's community radio, you also have the opportunity to call in and say that opinion is so outrageous and I object, and give your opinions and listen to the response from our guests, and it's a very engaging conversation. So that is what you are giving money to. It's not us on the show. We don't make money doing this. This is volunteer. This is part of our way of giving to the community. The guests are people who come in. They're just giving to the community. Your money goes just to keeping the lights on, just to keeping the transmitter going and keeping our equipment and those things. So,
and paying the rent, because we do have space here that we pay rent for.
Just those basic necessities. Yeah. And we don't ask for much, just what you can give. And know that you're supporting a really good community-based news, public affairs. And if you like the music too. We all like the music. So 888-931-0901. Or you can go to kkfi.org.
And pledge online. And it's safe and convenient and quick and easy. And after you have called that telephone number or gone online and pledged, we're going to open up our phone lines to ask you to call in and make your comment to our guests, Betty Tate Beaver from NAME and Janet Brown Moss Awaken with Bridgeworks. What is your opinion about race relations and how we might improve them?
Before we move forward, do we have some more thank yous?
Oh, we do. We do. We have Betty Jo Mooney to thank from Mission, Kansas, and she's a regular contributor, and also Dave Davis from Overland Park. I went to high school. No, I went to the same high school Dave Davis went to. We were separated by years. Thank you, Dave. I hope you're listening out there now. And Betty Jo, you too. And now that telephone number to call after you make your pledge, 888-931-0901, is 816-931-5534 to get in on this conversation. 816-931-5534. Oh, and we're going to thank also Janet Brown Moss Waken and Betty Tate Beaver for their contributions to KKFI at this juncture in time. Shall we get back to the conversation? Do you guys remember where we left off?
I don't know. There was something I was trying to think of. There are some, one idea that white people can do and is form affinity groups. If you happen to, and I try to put groups like this together sometimes. If you have friends who you know want to kind of improve their understanding of themselves and racism, because the first thing I need to do is work on myself. Mm-hmm. I need to look at myself and see what is it that I'm unconsciously doing that or saying or whatever. And so we can form affinity groups, and white people can kind of talk about that with one another.
Well, that was part of, that was what we were talking about before the break.
Good.
Is that it's not about feeling guilty.
Yeah,
Because no one living today created the racist system that we have. Mm-hmm. But we are responsible for working together to undo it. And part of that is being able to look inside yourself and identify those things that you learned at very young age. Mm-hmm. Ages that may be subconscious, mm-hmm. as you said, Janet, and work on those things. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I mentioned I was raised in California. I took three of my grandchildren to Disneyland recently. And it's just fascinating what a different eye I have on that world than I did when I was a child going to Disneyland. Because you see the subtle racism, sexism, all that is
Disneyland.
Right. It's not to say I didn't enjoy it, but I was aware of it. And then I was a very proud grandmother when my 11-year-old granddaughter said, oh, that ride made me uncomfortable because of the negative depiction of blacks in that one
caricatures,
right,
and that kind
exactly.
of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. And so there are things that we learn,
and we don't know we've learned them,
right?
We've just learned them, right? And so I need to do that, and I know there are other white people out there who would like to do that. I was talking with you a little bit ago before, Betty, about that. Whenever I've done workshops and worked with people, it's usually mixed groups, people of color and white people. And I also like to work with another facilitator who is a different ethnicity than I am, because it helps people learn just hearing us talk with each other. So what I say to people is, if you feel it's really taking a risk to say some things sometimes that I'm not sure how it's going to be taken. But if I don't say it, then I can't know. So what I ask each person in the room to rely on is that if I happen to say something and I step on your toes and I didn't know it, if you will let me know, if you will say, ouch, so that I know that there's something there that I did, I may not know what, and later on I can ask that person, or I can say right then, I can say, oops, what did that ouch mean? And then that can be a learning for everybody in the whole room. And it draws us closer then in our hearts, because we felt somebody be hurt and we felt somebody be sad about the hurt.
Just with the topic of, you know, you can't change something until you first acknowledge it. You know, acknowledge that you do. We all have these thoughts or beliefs that are up for, to me, with all the things that are going on, everything is up for reconsideration. And the things that lie dormant that we just, you know, do habitually and don't pay attention to. But one of the things that struck me in Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, In Between the World and Me, for the people who are familiar with that, and he it's a letter to his son, that's the way he set it up, but as a black man, he talked about his experience being a black man and living in his black body and being afraid a lot, and what, you know, and just kind of what that meant for him. But he makes the quote, like, for the people who believe that they are white, and he talks about when it, you know, when we say we the people, it wasn't including all people,
exactly,
or we weren't even considered people,
right?
And so it
nor women.
Right. And so it kind of challenges some of these words that we go around using, and it's like, well, what does it really mean to you to be white, and what does it really mean to be black? And these
exactly.
are just all labels and definitions, and where are we getting, you know, what does that mean?
And it's, I think about those things quite often when I hear Republican candidates talking about closing the borders and immigration issues, and being, my grandfather was Native American, and so I then think, wait a minute, you came to this country and wreaked havoc, oh, by the way. So it's you're right, the language we use and the lack of consideration of the full power of that language is really at the core of all of the things that we're talking about. We have to be very mindful, and I would say have the courage to do some research on your own. That it's not always necessary to ask someone else. We're not your encyclopedia.
Right.
Unless you ask me what book you would recommend that I would recommend you read, rather than asking me to explain racism.
Yeah, you all have to be college professors that you're going to teach us all the concepts of sociology. It is a weird thing that we just go around saying, oh, you represent an entire group, and you're going to have to be a professor about it.
Well, and a professor who was a dear friend and mentor was Derrick Bell, who was the first black tenured professor at Harvard Law School. He was one of Obama's professors. And he was a dear friend and mentor before his passing. I mention his name because we're talking about books. If you just Google him, he wrote a number of incredible books that explain racism in short story form. There's a book written a number of years ago called Faces at the Bottom of the Well. And these are short story form was to help explain some of the systemic racism in this country, and to get people to think about it from a storytelling perspective, So it's not legalese, but it's really quite compelling stories to read that really cause you to stop and think. Michelle Alexander's book, mm-hmm. A New Jim Crow, is mm-hmm. really
depressing.
It is depressing, but it's an important read.
It is. It is so important.
Janet sent us a lot of things to read prior to this show, and I think we're going to post probably one of those 11 things white people can do on our Facebook page. Yes, I emailed it to you, Amy. It's a link. I think we can get it posted. Evidently, we're not going to be able to post it right now.
It was a PDF.
Oh, it won't post?
Oh, I can send you something, though, that I don't know about that one. But anyway, I have some other things, too, that people, if people want to actually look at themselves, do some interior work, there's some worksheets that can be put on there that are not PDF. And if people want to just in the privacy of their own home do some self-evaluation, it's very satisfying as an individual to look at that also.
There is a website called Deep Green Resistance that has great guidelines for people of color solidarity guidelines, and Teaching Tolerance, which is an organization that's a project of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I'm also pleased to say they are institutional members of the National Association for Multicultural Education. They have incredible white anti-racism information on their website as well.
Well, in preparation for the show today, I was looking, especially with it being Black History Month, I was looking at white solidarity and black history and trying to find something, because there have been stories in the past, too. And what I found that was very interesting was that the Australian athlete, Peter Norman was his name. He was a sprinter, and he was the other guy standing on the podium in the 1968 iconic Olympic mm-hmm. image mm-hmm. of solidarity and standing up for human rights. And he was just kind of looked like this lanky other guy that was kind of, why is this happening to me, is what the look on his face kind of looks like in that picture. Apparently, though, what he actually did was he wore a badge that stated his solidarity for mm-hmm. human rights. And for that, was never allowed to run in Olympics again, even though he still holds the world record for the 200 meter mm-hmm. in Australia. I mean, the Australian record. Mm-hmm. And Australia, as late as the year 2000, told him that he could not participate in the Sydney Olympic planning unless he denounced what the other two men did on the podium that day in 1968, and he refused. He lost everything. He lost his entire career for a moment of solidarity. And I don't think we have to sacrifice that much anymore.
I do what it's saying.
But I want to know.
Yeah, there's something to sacrifice sometimes.
Yes.
And I have to be courageous. I have to examine, am I courageous enough to do this? Am I willing to take the risk? I guess I could give a personal example. I have a daughter who's now 40-something. And when she was going into the university at UMKC, she applied for a scholarship, and when I was given the call, I was given a call by a young woman, and it was pretty obvious to me from the sound of her voice that she was a young black woman working at the university, and she had all kinds of apology to me that my daughter did not get the scholarship. And she said, you know, she was right up there, but, you know, we have to pay attention to, you know, equity and what, she didn't use the word equity. She was like apologizing. She's a young black woman apologizing, trying to tell me backdoor wise that a person of color got that scholarship. And I said to her, you know, I don't need anybody to apologize for justice and for what it is, because if there's somebody who is equally qualified and we really need diversity at the table. I want that to happen. And so I do believe that there are things that, just like the man, the older man told me, you know, you don't want to give up the power. Well, you know, we might have to share some power here, folks, and we might have to take a little risk. Are you, as a white woman, willing and courageous enough to do that? I believe so. I believe we're strong people. And if we find enough other people who are willing to make some of those statements, it makes more of an impact rather than standing alone.
Well, thank you for joining us today for this conversation. And please, if you haven't yet, call 888-931-0901 and donate to Every Woman, and show your support for these kinds of conversations that help make our community a better place. We do have an announcement before we go off the air today. We've got Justice Project KC's annual fundraiser. That's going to be February 9th from 6 to 8:30 at the Bower. You can find out more information at justiceprojectkc.org. The Justice Project KC is a peer-based nonprofit human rights organization that provides criminal justice and social systems advocacy and navigation for women in poverty who may be suffering from a multitude of challenges, including homelessness, discrimination, addiction, mental illness, domestic violence, prostitution, or other forms of sexual exploitation. So it is a feminist organization that's helping for justice.
Jazz for Justice and Yakety Sax are going to play. And I understand there's probably a silent auction. And I believe it's at 115 West 18th Street.
Well, you can find out all that information at justiceprojectkc.org. And thank you once again for being on the show with us today. And make sure you stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf. And guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.